This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Members of the state legislature are feeling the backlash of bills that failed on the final night of the session. There are three specific bills that are putting not only this year's, but also next year's budgets in jeopardy. Jeopardy of a lowered bond rating, something lawmakers do not want to let happen. The Senate is in charge of the budget this year, and as Ashton Mara sat down with the chamber's finance chair to discuss the state of West Virginia's finances.
A mess. It's safe to say that's how Senate Finance Chairman Roman Prezioso would describe not next year's budget, but this year's. You know, the one lawmakers passed almost a year ago. You see, on the final night of the legislative session, there were two bills that needed to pass, Senate Bill 344 and 345, in order to supplement the finances of some pretty important programs.
Public Defender Service, $12 million. Technology improvements, $3.3 million. Division of Human Services, Medical Services, that's Medicaid, $7.4 million.
Child Protective Services, foster care, funds needed at the Salem Correctional Center and the Regional Jail Authority. Without the passage of those two bills, those programs and more will go without needed funding for the rest of the year. During the legislative process, the House amended both 344 and 345, taking $7 million from a special legislative fund and using it to expand the aged and disabled waiver program for seniors. They then recouped that $7 million from the Attorney General's Consumer Protection Fund, which Prezioso says the Senate agreed not to do.
The agreement was that we would leave him $12 million to have that, operating expenses. The Senate, intends to live up to that agreement. Now, you got new leadership in the House, which probably wasn't in the meetings when all this happened. You got a new finance chair, you got a new speaker, and you got an ongoing feud between the speaker and the attorney general. So the Senate's not going to get into that. We're just going to live up to the agreement of $12 million.
The second disagreement? Well, the House was using one-time money to expand a program for seniors, a worthy program, Prezioso adds, but expanding nonetheless with money they couldn't promise for next year. But the extended session, the 4 days the House and Senate come together to work on the budget bill, that extended session can only be used for the budget. These two supplemental appropriations bills are dead and gone, unless the governor calls a special session, which Prezioso says is more than likely. However, that's not the only bill that failed that greatly impacted the budget. In House Bill 4333, the so-called haircut bill, Governor Tomlin took $39 billion from special lottery funds and placed them back in the general revenue budget, balancing fiscal year 2015, the budget year that begins in July. Compromises with the House lessened it to $20 million, and 4333 passed the Senate with 12 minutes left Saturday night. With little time for the delegates to take it up, the bill died. But that leaves a huge hole now for legislators to plug by cutting programs or raiding funds somewhere else. Without 4333, the Senate has proposed plugging that hole with money from the Rainy Day Fund. But that number keeps growing. The governor's proposed budget called for nearly $84 million from the fund. The Senate's $125 million. And revenue estimates from the budget office are expected to drop by more than $15 million today, making the rainy day share increase by that much more.
You get into the problem where the bond agencies came and told us, we're under a warning right now. So if they start to see that money dwindle away, that's going to lower our bond ratings, and that's what we're trying to prevent. We can get by this year, but next year there will be some shortfalls too. As you can tell, the way we're putting this budget together, that the 2016 budget is going to be even more critical than the 2015 budget. And then if we have to continue to go into rainy day funds, we're going to be in deep trouble with our bond rating.
Last year, on the Monday after the final day of the regular session, Senator Prezioso and I sat down and he explained the entire budget, minus the small compromises the House and Senate would have to make. This time, he says, he's not sure. There are things that have to happen before he can determine how the budget can be balanced.
So we got to determine if we truly want to go in with those three pieces of legislation. to move forward on the budget or not.
The alternative, deeper cuts to programs and taking more money from the rainy day fund, both things the senator says he wants to avoid. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
In Washington, Senate Democrats pulled an all-nighter on Capitol Hill. They were on the Senate floor talking about global warming. They started Monday night and planned to go until this morning. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid led the Dusk to Dawn talkathon and says climate change is a question of our own survival. In Charleston last night, Lonnie and Ellen Thompson were doing the same thing, though at a shorter lecture. Ellen is from Kanawha County. Lonnie is from Braxton County. They met at Marshall University, married in 1971, and they are noted scientists who travel the world studying climate change. Last May, they were in West Central Tibet, drilling into ancient glaciers to determine the age of the ice there. They've been around the world several times over to drill into ice and study it. The Thompsons warned their audience about the carbon footprint we're all making. They stopped by our studio yesterday before the lecture.
I mean, I don't want to take away from fossil fuels. We would not have the economy of the world if we didn't have fossil fuels. But the fact is, the result of using those fossil fuels are now changing the climate of the planet, and we have to adjust. And I believe that if you look at employment in this country, there are now about 50,000 coal miners in the U.S. There are over 100,000 people working in the solar industry. It's changing, and it's important that the young people in West Virginia prepare for tomorrow's world. And, you know, this is what education and development and growth is about. We'll be using coal for a long time because we've built this society on it. But it's not the future. The future is in these alternative resources.
Okay. Well, we're both born in West Virginia. So we understand what coal means to the state. I mean, my grandfather was a coal miner up in Kingston, West Virginia. And, you know, we know that, as Lonnie said, the economy that we have, the luxuries that we have, were all built with cheap energy. And essentially that's coal. Cheap, abundant energy, and that's coal. And all you have to do is envision what your life is like when you have an ice storm and you lose your electricity. We have a reality check how dependent we are on having those electrons flowing across the grid. And in the future, we're going to have to make bigger investments in other sources of energy, but we still have coal and natural gas will be carrying us over the next few decades as we ramp up with other energies. So this isn't, this isn't where we're going to flip a switch, turn off coal, and ultimately turn off gas and just live on renewable energies. The infrastructure's not there.
Do you have solar energy at your own home?
No, we do not. We are discussing that. Certainly, we know people in Columbus, Ohio, who are using solar very positively. One nice way is we've been looking at purchase. We drive a Prius right now, but we've been looking at the all-electric car. And then what some people do is put the solar panels on their garages and charge their car, that way. I would say, though, that our team in 1983 used the first solar-powered ice core drill in the Andes of Peru to collect ice cores, and that was a much better, a cleaner, and easier way to drill at 18,600 feet in the Andes than dragging big generators and 55-gallon drums of fuel up. We're on our third set of solar panels for our drills.
I would just add that both of us went to Marshall University to do our undergraduate. I got my undergraduate in geology, and I actually went to Ohio State to study coal geology. So, I understand the importance of coal in this part of the world, but I also realize that the future is different, and we need to embrace it. Our young people need to embrace it, and our educational system needs to train those young people for what will be better jobs of the future.
Lonnie and Ellen Thompson, thank you very much.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you.
The Thompsons are professors at the Byrd Polar Research Center at Ohio State University. If you could not attend their lecture last night in Charleston, you can go online and see videos on their university website or go to ours, wvpublic.org. This is West Virginia Morning. It's coming up on 7:44. Mostly sunny and breezy today. Temperatures in the 50s and 60s. There's a chance of rain overnight with lows in the 40s and 50s. Rain or snow showers likely tomorrow, possibly some thunderstorms. Temperatures falling from the 50s into the 30s. Overnight, snow showers are likely with blustery winds. Snow Thursday morning becoming partly sunny Thursday, much colder with temperatures in the teens and 20s. One area of Huntington will soon see demolition and construction that could go a long way towards changing the city's reputation. Clark Davis explains.
A plan to tear down and rebuild housing in the Fairfield area of Huntington has gotten the green light. One of the oldest housing units under the care of the Huntington Housing Authority, Northcott Court, will be demolished. Huntington Mayor Steve Williams recently made the announcement during his State of the City address.
The road was recently cleared for the demolition of Northcott Court to commence for two new 40-unit senior housing complexes and an additional 50 single-family and duplex housing units are going to be constructed in the Fairfield neighborhood.
The Housing Authority plans to demolish the housing complex along Halger Boulevard. They will move the current residents to suitable housing nearby. The new units the mayor talked about will be scattered throughout the area, and not all concentrated in one place like the Northcott facilities. Once Northcott is torn down, officials hope there will be commercial development on the property. Sandra Clements is a city councilwoman for the 5th District, which includes the Fairfield area where Northcott Court is located.
As I drive around the community now, it's hurtful. It is sad to drive past someone's house, a house that my friend lived in, to see that nobody lives there, that the windows are broken, or that it's overgrown with weeds. I think about all the people who worked hard to keep their property up, to maintain it, and to now see that it isn't. It is truly heartbreaking.
The relocation process has already started for some residents and will pick up in the spring. The Housing Authority was passed over by the federal government for funds to start the process over the last summer, but now has the go-ahead. Clement says the demolition is just one step in the revitalization effort.
I want to see the area revitalized. I want people to come back to Fairfield and feel comfortable and to feel that it is their community and that they can make it grow. There are lots of things that have to happen in order for that to continue, not just housing. We need to have jobs. We need to have things going on in the community that will attract people and keep them here and want them to take pride in their community.
Northcott Court has become synonymous, fairly or unfairly, with crime in Huntington and more directly crime in the Fairfield area of the city. Clement says this revitalization could mean so much for the neighborhood.
I think that whenever you talk about projects or public housing, people have the image of crime, people not working, people not wanting to work. And I think moving Northcott Court will help to dissipate some of that feeling.
Since the 1940s, Northcott Court has been one of the first things people see as they drive into the city from the Halger exit off Interstate 64. Clements says changing this first impression is important for the community and the city.
And I think that people getting off the interstate and coming into the city want to see something positive. They want to feel safe. And I think that Northcott Court sitting there distorts that image of the city of Huntington.
The area has already been rezoned for commercial development. And Mayor Williams says the city hopes one of the businesses that moves in along Halger Boulevard is a grocery store.
The Huntington Housing Authority will seek to attract a private developer to redevelop the Northcott property. More than $60 million of investment is projected to occur in the Fairfield neighborhood as a result of these efforts.
The Housing Authority will cover moving costs of those in the Northcott facilities and hopes to have all tenants relocated by the end of May. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Clark Davis in Huntington.
Students attending West Virginia schools who enter 7th and 12th grade next year need certain vaccines. And as Cecilia Mason reports, counties are urging parents to take action now.
This is the third year the state has required vaccinations for rising 7th and 12th graders. 7th grade students are required to get a Tdap booster, which covers tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis, and one dose of meningococcal vaccine. 12th graders also must show proof they've had a Tdap and a second dose of meningococcal. Students who did not get the meningitis shot until they were over 16 are required to have only one dose. The School Health Services Coordinator for the West Virginia Board of Education, Rebecca King, says older children have traditionally not received vaccinations until now.
When they are younger, they go more frequently. Of course, they're on a schedule and getting all their vaccinations, but usually we see it to start to drop off after the child is moving into adolescent age. So that's the biggest thing to get their to get the parents to bring back the students in middle school and high school for their annual well child visit.
King says there have been outbreaks of pertussis or whooping cough across the country in recent years. And while meningitis is not as common, she says it can be severe.
We do see death in about 10 to 15% of the population that gets it, and about 11% to 19% could have some severe deficits from, you know, losing a limb, or arm or a leg, or even nervous system problems, deafness, or continue to suffer from seizures and strokes. So it's severe, so that is one of the reasons we require that.
King says getting the vaccinations and boosters not only prevents disease from spreading at school, it also helps protect family members who might be at risk for complications if they get sick.
So overall, you know, it's a good thing. It's not only protecting students, it's protecting students that are medically fragile and are immunocompromised, and it's protecting their younger siblings and their elderly family members.
Counties are notifying parents of 6th and 11th grade students now to make sure the children have the vaccines and the documentation is sent to the schools. King says some counties, in conjunction with the health department, even offer vaccination clinics. She says more information is available on the county school board websites. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Cecilia Mason in Martinsburg.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. I'm Beth Voorhees.